Welcome to the Teaching Space podcast, coming to you from Guernsey in the Channel Islands. Hello and welcome to the Teaching Space podcast. It's Martine here. Thanks so much for joining me. I have a very interesting interview for you today. I would introduce my guest, but actually I think he'll do a better job of introducing himself to you. So Chris Chamberlain, welcome to the Teaching Space podcast. Thanks for coming on the show. Would you like to introduce yourself to the Teaching Space listeners?
I would. My name's Chris Chamberlain. I work for Guernsey Mind. I've been there for 4 months. And previous to that, I had a 18-year career with the Airport Fire Service, where for those 18 years, I'd say probably for 10 or 12 of those years, I was teaching and training in firemanship, and recently more so in management and leadership before moving to Guernsey Mind.
Fantastic. And that's actually how we know each other, Chris, because I've done a lot of work with the Airport Fire Service with my teacher training hat on and assessor training hat on. So it's really nice to have kind of seen your career develop in the direction that it has, and for you to be now working for Guernsey Mind, which is a fantastic organisation. Just for a bit of background context, could you just tell me a bit more about, because Guernsey Mind's a charity and it's part of Mind, like the bigger charity Mind, have I got that right?
Yeah, so we are affiliated with UK Mind. So we're a local based charity affiliated to UK. And we basically do the same things UK do, but here on the within the bailiwick of Guernsey. So we've got a Guernsey Mind Centre in the heart of St Peterport, and we've also just set one up in Alderney, but we've also got some people in Herm that work for us as well. So
fantastic.
We try and reach out to the whole community and with good mental health. One thing we do, which is slightly different, is we have developed some learning and development platforms for awareness training. Probably our biggest success is managing mental health, which is a 3-hour course that we've developed, and we've trained over 4,000 people, I think, with that locally.
That's amazing. So that's a lot of people.
Yeah, we it's been very, very successful, and it's something we're very proud of.
Fantastic. And actually, I guess one of the main differences between the Guernsey branch of Mind and the UK Mind charity is, as you mentioned, that the bailiwick consists of more than one island. So it's really interesting to hear about that kind of pan-island approach that you have to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mental health, it's no one size fits all. So it's having accessibility to people when they need it. I suppose one of our biggest jobs is to reduce the stigma that's still attached around mental health. Unfortunately, I would say it's getting better, but it still represents quite a big challenge within most communities.
I can imagine it does, and I'm aware that it does from my own personal experience. One of the reasons I started this podcast was specifically to help teachers be the best they can be at their jobs without taking work home evenings and weekends, which clearly would have a massive impact on mental health. The teaching role is vast. So often the day job can leak into personal time, and many teachers struggle to switch off as a result. So I do feel that in the teaching vocation, mental health is at an all-time low currently because of these workload issues that I've mentioned. So I guess my first question to you, as somebody working in the mental health space, is what can teachers do, or teachers in this particular situation, the sort of work-life balance issue, what can they do to improve their mental health, or indeed, if they need to, seek help?
Well, I think the first thing to say is, in order to be the best you can be, you have to be able to take care of yourself. And one of the most important things around management and leadership, and that's not just, you know, being a CEO, or it's about managing and leading yourself. So, for example, self-care. You have to learn to take care of yourself. And look, as you quite rightly said there, it's separating work and your outside of your work, so your life balance, and having a good work-life balance. The big problem people have is they do, there's a culture still of, I'll answer my emails at home, or I'll take my work home with me. The problem with that is you're never actually away from work. And we quite often, when we deliver our manager's course, we ask, you know, who takes work home with them, who answers their emails at home, to which, you know, 80% of the room will put up their hand. And then I'll follow up that question with, oh, so you're a 24-hour service? Mm-hmm. And they laugh. And I say, well, no, it's important that you understand that if you answer an email from home, or you work from home, then people then start to expect that you will respond to an email if I send one late at home. So then they'll start sending, and the culture of, oh, well, they'll always be on call, sort of thing. And then the problem is with that is actually you're never having a break. You're never taking your mind away from the stresses and strains of work. I quite often talk about, you know, work isn't called pleasure, it's called work for a reason. you go to work, you give the best of you within an 8-hour period, or whatever that period looks like, but you cannot give the best of you at work if you aren't able to switch off when you get home, because that's where you build your resilience. And if we can't build resilience, and the pressures start to build up, so then you might start to feel about anxious about something. You may be not controlling very well, and then that anxiety can then lead on to depression, and then you can get into this vicious cycle, which then quite often will relate to how we sleep. And we know that sleeping is one of the most important things you can get right, because if you don't sleep well, that will then impact on the next day. And then again, this vicious cycle just starts over. So what we quite often, you know, ask is, you should put your work down at a certain time, and then do some of the self-compassion things, self-care, which that can be anything, but, you know, it matters that you look after yourself, like engaging in some activity, eating well, making sure you have good social connections, stay connected, and making sure that, you know, you do the right things to try and help you sleep. So they talk about this blue light, you know, answering emails in bed is sort of a double whammy, because you're going to be exposed to this blue light with whatever, you know, if you're using an iPad or an iPhone, but you're then answering the email, you're thinking about work, and then you think, when you close your eyes to try and get to sleep, then we think, well, did I do that right? Or what have I missed? What have I got to do tomorrow? And therefore, you know, you sort of toss and turn all night. So, you know, there's lots of little things, but, you know, they have a major impact on our mental health.
Absolutely. And you said so many important things there. There's a couple I just want to pick up on and probe a little bit. The matter of sleep is something I'm particularly interested in. A good few episodes ago, I had Daniel White on the show, who's a local sleep specialist, and he sort of dug into the importance of sleep and how it kind of affects absolutely all aspects of your life. And I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes to that particular episode, because I think it kind of pairs nicely with mm-hmm. with a lot of what you've been saying. What I found really interesting was hearing you talk about email in particular. Now, I'm passionate about email in the sense that I have very strict boundaries around email. Personally, I find it very triggering in a very negative way for my mental health. You know, before I open my inbox, I'm worrying about what's in there, and I'm worrying about the workload it represents. So it was great to hear you say that actually, if you are checking emails on your phone for work purposes, you are effectively a 24-hour service. And our employers do not expect that. They don't expect us to be on call 24/7, because if they did, they would not be getting the best version of us. And I think it was really encouraging to hear you say that. I think what's difficult to hear for some people is that we individually have some responsibility. And if we are answering emails late at night, we are training the people around us to expect that quick response, as you said. So actually, we need to take some responsibility and start setting some boundaries around how we deal with this sort of thing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, so boundaries then. Nobody teaches us boundaries, so to speak. We don't sit down and go, right, well, you know, what do good boundaries look like? But people that take care of themselves set themselves good boundaries. They manage themselves well. So, you know, it is tough because, you know, that unfortunately with technology, it's meant accessibility. And with that, the culture, unfortunately, there is a culture that has crept in and almost accepted that, you know, you can answer emails at home. I remember about 6 years ago at work, you know, they said to me, Chris, do you want your emails on your phone?
No.
And the other guys were doing it because it was almost like a rite of passage. Like you're moving up the ladder. And I said, no. And they said, well, why not? Everybody else is at your level. And I said, well, you know, this is my personal phone for a start. Mm-hmm. And I'm not that important to need to answer emails at home. If someone needs me here in my working hours, they're quite clear. I'll get back to them as soon as I can. And I set my stall out very early that would be the case. I'd never take work home with me. And by doing that from the outset, actually, nobody cared. Nobody cared that I wasn't out. They knew that I wasn't going to answer my email. None of the people I worked with then emailed me past a certain time because they knew I wouldn't answer it. So it's about expectations. You're setting your stall out. These are the expectations, whether they're clients or students or employee or people you work with. They know that those are the boundaries, and actually those are the right boundaries to be setting. So I think the important thing from what I'm trying to say here is that you need to be able to manage yourself. Now, you need to be able to learn to say no, which is not easy to do. And I'm not going to say it is. But when you're overloaded, it's sometimes easier to say yes. And then we overload ourselves more and more. And then before we know it, we're sort of start to struggle with managing the workload that we've sort of created ourselves, really. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Learning to say no is such an important skill in self-management. And I think I've got a podcast episode about that too. So I think I'll link to that in the show notes just as some extra listening. It was really interesting hearing you talk about the sort of organizational slash peer pressure to put your emails on your phone. And it made me remember something that happened to me very early in my teaching career, a very similar scenario. I started teaching further education about 12 years ago now. I was brand new, teaching office administration to 16 to 19 year olds. And my colleagues suggested I give my personal mobile number out to my students, that that was the done thing. That's just what was expected. And of course, I had that moment of, that doesn't feel right. But I was new and I was freaking out because I just moved from the finance sector to teaching. So I was like, yeah, no, that's done. I'll do that. And it transpired that I ended up having a bit of an issue with a very troubled teenage student sending me very unacceptable types of texts, and it was really worrying and it got quite serious and the police had to get involved.
Yeah.
It was a really awful situation which could have been very easily prevented either by the organization having a really clear policy on what's okay and what's not. Yeah. They subsequently did put that in place, but actually the truth is I should have had those boundaries in place as well. I need to take a bit of responsibility there for sussing out that it wasn't okay, that that was an expectation. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, you know, when after that had happened, I developed very good boundaries around the use of my personal mobile device. Yeah. And that sort of flowed into emails after that.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, boundaries are, I think the important thing here, and this relates to good mental health, is that we are not perfect. We will make mistakes. So boundaries are really tough. But, you know, one of the most important things we can do as humans really is be able to reflect and acknowledge that sometimes we will do well, sometimes we will make mistakes. But the power of reflection is saying, look, that didn't go so well. I'm not perfect, but what might I do differently next time? Mm. And when we do that, that's a part of self-compassion and positive psychology, is that we're learning and we're accepting that we have flaws, but what we're doing is we're growing at the same time, saying actually that didn't work, and sometimes sharing that with somebody else is really important, because what you're doing is you're sharing an experience, and they might go, well, yeah, I had that once, actually, you know what, I need to take heed of that advice as well, and that's how we build our boundaries. You know, we do it by, yes, yeah, we should be able to manage and predict and prevent. But, you know, like with anything, there will be new challenges. You know, for teachers in the UK, lockdown, working through, you know, sitting around their table, there'll be different challenges and boundaries. But it's saying to yourself, look, I'm not going to be perfect here, because, you know, this is not normal, but, you know, I'm going to do my best with what I have. And, you know, when I make a mistake, I'm going to learn from that and just be the best I can.
It's time for a quick ad break. I'm a huge fan of audiobooks from Audible, and I want to share the love. Grab yourself a 30-day Audible trial and free audiobook at theteachingspace.com/audible. I think that aspect of sharing is really important, and that's a lot of what I try to do with this particular podcast, but sharing in relation to mental health as well, when you feel confident and able to do so, is really quite something. You know, if you're able to actually admit to a colleague that you're struggling with something, the impact of that can be incredibly positive. It's certainly happened to me in the past, where maybe I was having a bit of a tough time and I'd mentioned it to a colleague and they said, well, actually, yeah, I'm having a tough time as well. And just having those conversations, you talked about the stigma attached to mental health at the start of the show. And I think, you know, sharing experience, whether it's something unrelated to mental health or something related to mental health, generally is going to improve things.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, emotional intelligence is quite a big thing these days. And, you know, leadership, if we talk about leader, you know, anybody can be a leader. It doesn't have to be anyone top of an organization. It can be you in that classroom. Somebody that's got the ability to hold their hands up and say, I'm struggling. They are strong. They are super strong people. They are in touch with their own emotions. They're able to engage with other people. Because of that, they quite often recover very quickly and move forward. But what they also do is they say, it's okay. It's okay to talk. And that is one of the things we're trying to break down, is saying, look, just talk to each other. You know, you're there to support each other. But be that leader, be that person that's able to talk and share an experience.
I love that idea of reframing struggle and reframing mistakes as strength. If you are able to recognize mistakes and struggle, then you are strong. I think that's a really powerful message.
Yeah, no, it's self-awareness. If you understand you, and you're not trying to be somebody else, then you understand what makes you work, what your sort of areas of development are. That enables you to understand other people and the social awareness side of things. So it allows you to stand in somebody else's shoes, which means you're probably more empathetic. And you're able to support people where and not judge. Whereas people that aren't so good at their own, with understanding themselves, is that they're a bit more judgmental, or maybe they'll try and be somebody else. And when we try and be somebody else, we're not being ourselves. So it sort of goes against our internal values. And when we go against our internal values, what we're doing is we're in conflict with ourselves, and that can create anxiety and sort of poor mental health.
So if you have a colleague, perhaps at work, who you've become aware that they are struggling with their mental health, you've just given us a good idea of where to start with that. Having empathy is the right place to start from. But is there anything else that you could or should do if you have this awareness of your colleagues struggling with their mental health?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to say is, you know, become more aware of the common signs of anxiety, stress, and depression. So, you know, there's lots of things you can look out there. And I'll give you some links to our website at the end. But, you know, for example, anxiety, you know, we have sweaty palms, we can't often sort of think clearly, or, you know, we get sort of headaches, we get sort of, butterflies in our stomach. It's to have a good understanding of some of the signs and symptoms around some of these lower down mental health issues. That's the first thing, really, we all should be better at, because that gives us the ability then to think, well, is there something else going on here? So when we see a difference or a change in someone's thought pattern or behavior, is not to judge, but the first thing that should spring to our mind is, are they okay? That's because when we ask ourselves that, we're taking away the judging element. Oh, they're always like that, or they're not in work today, or, you know, the first thing to say is, are they okay? Is everything okay there? And the second thing with that is that it's okay to ask. You're not going to make anything worse by asking, are you okay? But again, we tend to shy away from it because what about if they're not? What am I going to do? And people worry that they're not sure about how to manage that. So when we give our managers management training, is that we quite often give scenarios. For example, how would you manage this scenario? But unfortunately, in the workplace, we quite often will meet a performance issue with your sort of go down the line of the policy of you're not meeting targets, etc. But performance is closely linked to our mental health. So generally, if performance dips, when they've been a model employee, you've got to ask the question, well, why, what's happened? Why is this, is there something going on that we're not aware of? And providing a comfortable and open space where you're able to say, look, is everything okay? That just provides the opening line to generally somebody just opening up and saying, actually, you know what, I'm not okay. So that's where you need to start. Mm. And then from there, you need to listen. Listen is the most powerful thing you can do. And what I mean by that is you're actively listening to them. You're not listening to reply. You're not judging. And you certainly don't say, well, when I had this, I did this. Because what we do know about mental health is that we may have the same condition, but the way we react is completely different. They'll never be the same. So people will respond differently. And then if you are really worried, is that you point them in the right direction. So if they're in crisis, then they should think about phoning Samaritans. Or if the people you work for have got an employee assistance program, you can use things like that. We should be encouraging people to be able to speak to their line manager, but we also know that unfortunately in the workplace, and we've got to be realistic about it, that some line managers aren't very approachable. But who else should they then be able to speak to? Is there a HR, someone in HR, or is there somebody else that they feel comfortable speaking to? But also, there's lots of things out there. So you can speak to your local Mind or get in touch with Guernsey Mind. And there's people there that can help. But also, seeing your GP, which is quite important, which I can appreciate at the minute is not the easiest thing to do. But there are, that's certainly where you'd be support. Start, and then it's just about supporting that person. One of the things, that is important. It is to be empathetic, and set just saying you'll be there for them. But one of the things it's not great is saying at least you've got a job, or at least we're still working, because those sort of things don't really help either.
That's such good advice, Chris. So much good stuff there. I'm sure everybody listening can benefit from that. Thank you for that. As we head towards the end of the interview, is there any sort of final thought or final piece of advice you'd like to leave the Teaching Space listeners with in relation to mental health, whether it's their own mental health or the mental health of colleagues?
Yeah, I think just go and find out a little bit more about it. Guernsey Mind do run awareness and managers training. which we now can do online, so it is available to everybody. Find out a little bit more. I think that's the important thing to say. MHFA, Mental Health First Aid, England, they're amazing. They do sort of two-day courses, which give you more information on it. And what we're trying to do here in Guernsey is push for mental health first aiders within the workplace, like your physical first aiders. And we've trained up over 450 locally, which is great. But I think that, you know, practice self-compassion, learn to be able to manage yourself and your work-life balance. Nobody's saying when you're super busy, you can't take work home. Nobody's saying that. I think the important thing is that the majority of the time when you leave the workspace, you know, you should leave the workspace. But 20% of that time you might need to take some work home. And that's fine because you can recover from that. It's when you work, when you're doing it all the time and it becomes a habit, because that will have an impact on, you know, you time, which is super important. For people who've got families, it'll impact on family time. It will mean you're not present when you need to be present. So those are really important. But for those that are working from home, I think a really important thing to do and to consider is get your setup right at home. So if you're working from a table, get that setup right. Wake up normally, you know, keep a morning routine that you always had previously, and establish your workplace. And I think what I need to really want to nail down on is your house is not set up for your work ergonomically. Your dining room chair is not going to support your back for hours on end. So you need to think about getting up and moving, take regular breaks, move away from the workspace. Exercise when and where you can, you know. So there's loads of things out there at the minute you can do at home, or just going for a little walk, getting fresh air is really important. Stay connected, you know, check in with your colleagues. You know, it's, if you need to do it virtually, then do it virtually. And share your experiences, like I think I said to before. If you're having a bit of a problem, share your experience. Someone else might just be able to help you and normalise it. Say, actually, it's quite normal for us to think like this at the minute. Sometimes that can be super important. And get support. So if you need to talk to someone, you know, talk to someone. You should do that. If you think that someone's struggling, do it vice versa. Speak to them, ask them how they are. Use available resources that you've got to hand. There's loads out there, EAP. You can use your local mind, and practice self-care. I think that's the important thing. I mean, what I will say about people that are working from home, there's still people working from home in Guernsey, is that people think that if I leave my workstation, then my boss is probably thinking that I'm skiving. Or if I don't answer that email now, he'll think I'm skiving. And I know it sounds funny for me to say it, but everybody we've spoken to about this, they all said, yeah, I felt that if I left my workstation, even to make a sandwich, my boss might think I'm skiving. And because we're all worried about our jobs at the minute. So, you know, this is basically anxiety, isn't it? We're anxious about what someone thinks about us. Well, actually, you're entitled to that break. You're entitled to have a little walk, do a bit of exercise, go for lunch. So try and keep things as normal as you can.
Chris, that's brilliant. Thank you ever so much. As we sort of wrap things up, just one final question for you, and that is, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so you can go to Guernsey Mind's website. On there you can find my contact details, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Chris Chamberlain. And so if anybody wants to get in touch, please feel free. It's good to share experiences. And like I say, we're all learning all the time.
Brilliant. Thank you, Chris. I'll make sure all of those links are on the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure chatting to you, and I wish you well.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Teaching Space podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at theteachingspace.com.